Here we go. And I do mean that. Here we go at 12:15, just like every day at this time. Michael Knight in the KPQ radio studios, beginning the show called The Agenda. The show with no agenda whatsoever. And today I ask you to consider this. Did you ever try to play football indoors with your brothers and sisters and that kid from the next block? And your dad said if you were real men, you'd play tackle? So you put all the cushions from your mom's new couch on the floor so tackling would be fun? And you were Joe Montana until you tried to hit Jerry Rice on that post route over by the fireplace? Yeah. Instead, your beautiful spiral was intercepted by that old floor lamp that used to be your grandmother's, and now it's just a tangle of brass and cords. And your sister, I believe, committed pass interference of a sort. And now, the game is over forever, because Mom said, and no more playing in the house. Until I find my lost wiffle ball, and when I do, it is on. Game 7 of the World Series, played for the first time in our living room, part of the hall, and some of the kitchen as well. Yes, I know, wiffle balls can break lamps, or framed artwork, or that ugly purple vase that your mother loves because it was made by her college boyfriend, but he's dead anyway, so what possible difference could it make? We'll play when I get back. Now, I've just been handed a note that our football guest is not coming, so why did I read that? Because I am stubborn. Here's a new thought, going a different direction. Maybe many of you are undecided. Is the planet warming? Is it cooling? Perhaps spinning out of control? And here's the question. Is it still cool to pretend that science does not even exist? And if it does exist, you can refute any scientific fact by simply saying with conviction, well, I don't believe you. And that puts Einstein, Newton, Hawking, Galileo, and Darwin right back on their heels. Seriously, what could those doofuses say, huh? Because you said you don't believe them. Your one stubborn, uninformed opinion lays low the entire basis for physics and math and a smattering of geometry and most of the earth sciences. You know, those bothersome subjects like biology and chemistry and astrophysics. They're all made virtually unusable by a goodly portion of the population who say they would be happier in the Dark Ages. Oh, look, a witch. Perhaps Professor Frank Donovan from Whitman College can set us on the course to see the light, providing you and yours can still read and write. Obviously, the harsh element of language is a lot for our species. Jeepers. There appears to be a different word for everything, making simple conversation almost impossible. That's right. The second half of our show is becoming the first half of our show because of the football cancellation. You've got to be flexible. Eyes in the back of your head. We're going to talk with a real scientist now from an actual university. You know, where they teach stuff. And he's with us right now. Professor Donovan, are you with me?
I am with you. Thank you for the opportunity, Michael.
Even after that introduction, you're still with me?
I'm still here.
It's nice to have you here.
I cannot throw a football, but I am a scientist.
Well, I believe you're a scientist. You're a professor at Whitman College, and a scientist in our valley is going to be held at the Wenatchee Valley College Grove Auditorium, 4 to 5 p.m. on Wednesday. That's mañana, the 13th. And we're glad that you're coming to town. What do you want to say to the people who are gathered? If it's a group of true believers, what are you going to tell them? And if it's a group of deniers, what can you tell them?
Well, for both, we have accomplished incredible things since the 1970s. I mean, rivers no longer are catching on fires. Our rivers are very clean. Water, the city water, municipality water is some of the cleanest water you can get.
Unless you're in Flint, Michigan, right?
Unless you're in Flint, Michigan.
Right.
But those people are going to jail and they're paying. We can treat our wastewaters. We've removed lead. A little known fact. Since the 1970s, we have reduced childhood blood levels of lead by 95%. I don't know why this is not in every newspaper. We no longer spray children with DDT in our foods. The atmosphere is so much better in some regards. You can go to L.A. now and not be smog.
It's true.
The stratosphere's ozone layer is recovering. We do have the greatest environmental legislation in the world. We have governments that choose to not enforce it, but we take them to court and we win. There's just so many environmental things, incredible environmental things we have done over the decades. And that's what the main book about, the main topic of the book about and what the talk will be about. But, it's been 2 years since the book was published in March, 2 years ago. And I've had some real epiphanies looking back on things. The last chapter was on technology, and I expressed the role of technology in mitigating climate change. And I am even I could write another book on that now. It's just incredible, the technologies that are coming out. And this is something that's going to blow away some of my fellow tree huggers, is capitalism and free market enterprise will be playing a major role in mitigating climate change. Now, I don't know if we can do it. I don't want to paint too rosy of a picture, but no one is making Toyota manufacture Priuses. They're doing it because there's money to be made.
The market is there.
The market is there. That is capitalism. I don't know how many people knew this, but about a couple of weeks ago, Ford and VW announced a merger, not a corporate merger, but a merger where all of their vehicles will be electric by 2025. Nobody's forcing this. There's money to be made, as you said.
It's a brand new product line whose time has come. So really what we're saying is, if we would just give science a chance, it has the ability to solve a lot of our problems that we look at as insurmountable.
Yes, yes. I'm going to talk about some technologies that some people will laugh about, but they're coming. They're going to be here.
How optimistic are your students at Whitman College to inherit this future?
Well, I've taught this course for 20 years, and I had people crying leaving my classroom, and I thought, I got to change this. And I really taught the same thing, but from a story of success. I mean, we talked about the rivers burning in the 70s. We don't do that anymore. And this is a success story. The most important thing is that everybody has a role to play with this. As Corey Norgaard, my afterword author on the book, writes, is the scientist, from the standpoint of characterizing climate change and saying what has to be done, the scientists are done. We've done everything we can do. You can read the reports or not. But now it's the social scientist's role to move this forward. The politicians, the sociologists, the people that go out there and study humans and work with humans. Scientists don't do that very well. And it's other people's role to play now to do this, and that's where it is. I have people making art pieces at Whitman with this. There's humanities people writing poetry and stories about this. I would like to describe myself as cautiously optimistic.
Excellent. I remember a time when, in the early 70s, the idea of recycling became fashionable. And when it was described to a politician or anybody who was curious about what it meant, they came away with one thing. You expect a truck to go to every house in America and pick up their trash and have it separated? It's impossible. It cannot be done. And that was the conclusion.
It. Yeah. And now I go over to friends who are conservatives, and I see the recycling bin, and I go, oh, you're doing that. Yes, little Johnny brought that home from elementary school, and we're going to recycle now.
Well, plus that is a very conservative position to recycle.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, here's a fact from your very close city, Seattle. Did you know that Seattle recycles or reuses or composts 80% of their total waste?
Wow.
80%. Can you imagine that? And now Walla Walla, where I am, cannot do that because we're so far from distribution sources and recycling places. But these big metropolis areas, which make the most waste, have just a wonderful opportunity to make money off waste.
And anybody looking to Seattle as a model that will have proof before their very eyes that it can be done in their city as well.
Yes, yes.
One of the most remarkable facts I heard about other countries using the future to answer some of their energy and pollution problems was the number one user of solar energy in the world is Germany. They use more than anybody else. And it is Berlin's a cold winter town. They are in the north. So the idea that you can only do solar energy in Las Vegas or the deserts of America is completely wrong. The country that does it the best is in the northern hemisphere, northern parts of Europe.
This is another little factoid. About 2 or 3 years ago, an internal memo leaked from Exxon, now Exxon Mobil, that conceded that by 2100, the energy base in the world will be solar.
It's why the sun is there. That's how we are the Cinderella planet. We have a sun near us.
And over the last 5 years, this is another technology blurb here, over the last 5 years, solar cell efficiency has increased. You want to guess?
130%.
Oh, no, not quite that good. 85% we have increased solar cell technology.
And that's about time, too, because we've been making lesser efficient solar cells for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And in the last 2 to 3 years, every bit of energy, every bit of new energy that has come online in the U.S. has been renewable. I'm very optimistic. I have kids. I have to be optimistic, but I'm a scientist and I see these news reports coming out every day, and just that's the highlight of my day is seeing a new technology segment.
Well, imagine how Madame Curie felt when she came home with one of her nice inventions and people just said, well, we don't understand it. It can't be of any use to us. Why do you even exist? Your work is useless to the population. And then,
yes.
And science has to face that over and over again as they train the troops.
I see it every day. I will read something in a scientific journal and I think, what are you possibly going to do with that? And then I think back to the introduction of chapter 8, the technology chapter, where I talk about the LED, and this, the LED is based on the principle of rotating light.
Mm-hmm.
That principle was discovered in the late 1800s. And I'm sure when, I apologize, I don't remember the name of the guy. I'm sure when he went to the pub that night and told his friends, they went, good luck feeding your family on that one.
Yeah, right.
And now all of your soft touchscreen technology is based on the liquid crystal, not the LED, I'm sorry, liquid crystal display. All of our technology is based on that principle that he observed in the 1800s.
We're talking with Dr. Frank Donovan. He's with Whitman College. You've mentioned your book. Give us the name of it, the title, please.
It's a long one. I'll have to turn to it. I like the short title, Environmental Success Stories.
There you go.
The subtitle is Solving Major Ecological Problems and Confronting Climate Change.
I'll go with Success Stories. Good for you.
Yep.
Well, what was the first one that made you write the book, the success story that came to mind? You said, you know, there's a whole book here.
Water. I've been a lifelong environmentalist. I grew up as a woodsman, hunting and fishing. And I could sit by water for hours and hours just watching the stream flow by. As a chemist, water is the most bizarre chemical we have in the universe. I think there's around 80 million chemicals known to mankind now, or humankind, and water is the strangest. It's the simplest, but it is the most bizarre chemical we have.
And it's the cornerstone of life, isn't it?
Yes, you don't find life without water. This is one of the things they look for, astronomers look for when they focus their telescopes and technologies out in space, is the water signature in the infrared spectrum.
What is it so resilient about water that allows you to clean it and it becomes drinkable water again?
That's a lot of chemistry. That is a lot of chemistry.
You'll have to simplify it for me especially. Our audience is smarter than I am.
The thing that makes water weird, as I say weird, is a concept of hydrogen bonding, how it holds itself together. A few other molecules can do that, but water does it in such a way that, because of its molecular size, it is just strange. It breaks all the predictions about water until you account for hydrogen bonding.
Plus, if you can steam it and it'll go back and be water. You can freeze it, it'll melt and it'll be water again.
Yeah. Yes. It's the ultimate toy. I call it the ultimate chemical.
Well, that's your first one, the water. And obviously, I've been to Cleveland, Ohio. I know what the Cuyahoga looked like when it was catching on fire. But it's a cleaner city now, and it's a cleaner river now. And they have a lot of pride in the fact that it was awful, but they fixed it.
Yes, it was Green Monday, but it was still clean.
Well, those were folks in Cleveland that are slightly Irish. They can't be counted on to contain themselves.
Yes. The rivers, I mean, I grew up as a child playing in rivers and streams that were literally open sewers. And today you can go swim in any moving waterway and you're fine. It's shocking looking back at my health, why I did not die of many diseases. You could literally see the sewage pipes coming out and at the side of the bank.
Where'd you grow up?
Alabama, northern Alabama.
Okay.
Huntsville area.
I was going to guess Virginia with your accent, but I was off.
Some people say Texas. I'll take anywhere in the South.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Well, when did you become a scientist? What was it about playing in the dirty river that turned you to say, you know what, this could be done better?
I think I could owe everything to my mother. I didn't want to go to college. I was not a very good student in high school. And she maneuvered me around, and I didn't know it until I had my degree that I had a college degree because of her. But in the 70s, Congress gave a lot of the state schools some money to develop environmental programs. And most of them did the easy route where they just hodgepodge courses together and called it an environmental degree. And that's what I had was environmental health. I prefer to call it environmental science because the term has changed these days. But then the light bulb went off, and I've stayed in academia most of my life.
When you look at the countries that are ahead of us now in terms of environmental attention, there are some, and then there's some that are so far behind us, you wonder when China's going to wake up. What is it about pollution that makes their economy so infectious and allows them to just turn a blind eye to the cities that are under a brown cloud?
Yeah, well, I will be a little pro-China here.
Okay, go.
They have invested more in renewable energies than we have. Their citizens have typically not spoken up, but they have been protest now. They are really bent on cleaning up the atmosphere. The problem with China from a pollution standpoint is the direction the wind blows. Everything is on their coastal side, their east coast side, and the wind blows from the west where they generate all their power, and it just accumulates there. But I had a student who did teaching English in China there, and he took a train ride to the east part of the country, and he said for an entire day he was in a windmill farm on a high speed train.
Wow.
They are invested money way better than we are, and this is something that our politicians need to realize. These other countries are investing in renewable energy. They're going to have the patents, and we're going to be buying the renewable energy machines and everything from them. This really gets my goat sometimes about how we don't invest in renewable energy. We give the fossil fuel industry billions of dollars a year as tax write-off. I think it's $50 billion. And that could go toward technology for renewable energy, and we would not be buying our windmills from China or wherever we're going to be buying them from in the future.
You probably noticed there are certain industries in America that spend $0 on research and development. There are some that spend billions, and of course we're familiar with their products because they keep coming out with new ones. But other people don't seem to be curious about what the future holds.
They're too busy on their iPhone. I hate to sound like an old man here, but my kids are gamers. I try to work away from this, but there's not enough attention today in some kids. Now there's some incredible youth movements. I don't want to bash kids. There's some incredible youth movements out there that are waking people up. The lawsuit against the federal government for climate change, the youth movement, this is incredible. It's going through the courts. The government keeps trying to dismiss it. It's going through. This is going to go. This is making a difference. The future is education.
There you go. It always is, isn't it?
I clearly have a bias here, but the future is education.
Smart people always find a way to get things done, and others just seem to lack the curiosity. We're talking with Dr. Frank Donovan. He's going to be speaking. He's a professor at Whitman College. He's going to be speaking here in town called Science in Our Valley at Wenatchee Valley Grove Auditorium, 4 to 5 p.m. tomorrow. His book is called Environmental Success Stories, and it has a long subtitle. And we'll come back and talk with him further right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda.
797979. Text FORCE to 797979.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:39 in the afternoon, a beautiful sunny day here in Wenatchee. My very special guest is Dr. Frank Donovant. He's a professor of science at Whitman College. He'll be speaking on the subject Science in Our Valley at Wenatchee Valley College Grove Auditorium tomorrow, 4 to 5 o'clock. That's tomorrow at 4 to 5 o'clock there at Wenatchee Valley College. And while we were in commercials, Doctor, I wanted to look up a quote because I couldn't quite remember the exact quote, but it's another Einstein quote, and it reads, "Great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds." Is that always true of great spirits, great minds, and great ideas?
I think it is. It's true of everything we accomplished in the 70s. Each chapter is dedicated to this. Every time, the book is powered by the citizens in protest, just like as I mentioned earlier in China. But every time the citizens said, we have to clean up our water, or we have to remove lead from gasoline, we have to, not stop breathing smog in LA. Every time this was done, the politicians on one side, sometimes on both sides really, said, well, it's going to cost too much. We can't do that. And we see that actually the cost was not a cost. It was a benefit because we have healthier lives now. We live longer. And we have, and again, there's money to be made. I don't want to turn off any viewers, but we were on the right track in the 70s, and we had a policy shift in 1980. And you know what happened? And it went toward deregulation. Not too many people are saying this today, but I say this in the last chapter. The climate change that we're experiencing around the world today is due to a lack of leadership in 1980. The statement was, oh, the economy cannot afford this, and now we're seeing conservative economists coming out talking about how this may come up to 10, 15, 20% of the GDP in 50 years if we don't get our act together.
Right now, our government is estranged from the scientific community for whatever reason. I don't know how else to put it. But there have been times in the past when the kings and queens came to their senses when they said, I need somebody who can sail to the new world. We're going to go over there and get something. I don't know what, but I can't go myself. Get me one of those guys who knows how to sail. Get me one of those adventurers. I need an explorer to go claim lands for me. It became interesting to them because they wanted gold. They wanted the investment. They wanted the power that came with the new inventions, the new discoveries. And I'm sure that that can be remade with modern science.
It is. And this is something that I'm writing an article on right now. We have had basically three phases of environmental policy in the country, and they reflected in the world. The first phase was everything goes. Rivers on fire, dumping sewage directly in rivers. This was a bad phase. This led to the 60s and 70s where we passed legislation to change that. And I can't put a time stamp on this, but early in this century, we shifted to a new mode. And that's the mode of capitalism solving problems and making money off of it. I mentioned this earlier with Toyota and all these places. Show me a company today that doesn't press a green image somewhere. And this third phase of free market, we still have to have regulations now. Don't get me wrong about that. But we're entering a phase where there's money to be made off the environment. There's some naysayers that are going, well, the economy can't afford that. But when we're paying for it, the economy will afford that.
What do you see for the next big turnover in terms of progress? Is it going to be in the air, in the water, in maybe some science that we haven't thought of?
I think it's going to be in energy. I really see energy. I'm going to save my punchline for the talk tomorrow night.
Well, is there a possibility of introducing a new form of energy that would free us?
Yes, you were dead on it. There's some new forms of energy around the corner. My colleagues in physics laugh at me every time I say this and call it Frank's pipe dream. But let's just go ahead and do it. I'll give you the teaser.
Okay.
There's 10 to 15 private companies and private entities today working on new forms of nuclear energy. Now, I'm a tree hugger. I'm a lifelong tree hugger, but I'm pragmatic. And the one that cracks the nut on these new forms of nuclear energy is going to be bigger than Amazon or Google or Steve Jobs all put together.
How does it work?
Fusion.
Oh.
That's the punchline. You're going to laugh at me now.
No, I'm not. There's been a lot of people working on that since the 80s.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. The information signals you've just heard are a test of the emergency alert system. If this had been an actual emergency, you would have been given additional information on the emergency. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
And this is the key. This is the paradigm shift. I mean, we have a fusion reactor that we've been working on with Europe. I don't know what the price tag is. $5 billion. This is not going to work. And the scientist in Skunk Works at Lockheed Martin thought about small scale. And here's why my colleagues in physics can laugh at me, because I laugh back. Last year they filed a patent for one of the processes that no one else has solved. And they said in a year we're going to prove this patent works. You have to have something working, but in a year we're going to make an announcement. This spring, I watch the news every day waiting to see if my pipe dream comes through. But even if it doesn't, I see a big future for nuclear energy. There's a thorium reactor. Back when we made the bombs, we had a choice between and converted the bomb technology into power technology. We had a choice of using a uranium reactor or a thorium reactor. Well, the uranium reactor gave us bombs, and the thorium did not, and it didn't give us near as bad material to dispose of. There's companies working on the thorium reactor, which are going to be much safer and don't make plutonium. So I see energy. It has to be energy, because that's what fuels everything. We're going to use more energy every year. The world's going to use more energy. Certainly renewable solar cells. As I said in the first segment, the last 3 years, there has been no new fossil fuel plants built. It's going to be solar. It's going to be wind. And that's just the world is going, because that's where the money is to be made. We have the technology today, and we're going to use it.
So if I were president, Dr. Donovan, and I gave an unlimited budget to the best scientists in the world to come up with a new form of energy, and I said don't worry about the cost, because when we get it, we're going to start selling it to the rest of the world. How long would it take for us to have a new form of energy, do you think, in years?
I don't know, but let me tell you another sad story. It's a good story and a sad story, because it's about the bomb. Just south of you and just west of me is the Pacific Northwest Labs, which used to be known as the Hanford Reservation.
Right.
If you've been there, you're going to know the answer to this. It's now a national park, because that's where they made the plutonium for making one of the two bombs. We researched a uranium bomb and a plutonium bomb. We made both because we didn't know which one would work. From the back of the envelope calculations, literally the back of the envelope calculations to when the first bomb was detonated in the Southwest, how long did you think that would, do you think that would take?
I think
how many
about
years?
I thought it took about 9 months.
You're close. It was 18 months. We had no technology whatsoever. We had no land taken over. We had no facilities. We had no power facilities. We had no cooling water. We had nothing. In 18 months, we exploded a nuclear weapon.
Well, you had Robert Oppenheimer. That helped.
Yeah, yes, Oppenheimer. Now, this is not something some people would brag about. But again, go back to the standard, the space program. When Kennedy announced that we were going to put a man on the moon, I don't even know if NASA existed. And we did it. When you take the American people, and again, it's not just the American people, all of the top scientists of the world still want to come here to do research because we have the money. They're starting to go to China. This scares me. China is going to have the patents that we're going to be buying stuff, more stuff from China. We need to invest in our energy future and not fossil fuels, and that's going to be a win.
That's Dr. Frank Donovan. He's speaking at the Science Center Valley Symposium at Wenatchee Valley College at Grove Auditorium tomorrow between 4 and 5. He's a professor of science in Whitman College. We'll be back to finish our talk with him, and I'll remind you where he's speaking right after this.
You're listening to
Buzz. You need to take action today.
Call Awake Health today at 509-424-5899, because you're worth it.
You're The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:51 here at our studios in Wenatchee, right on the Avenue of Dreams. My very special guest is Dr. Frank Donovan. He's speaking tomorrow. He's a professor of science at Whitman College. He'll be speaking at Wenatchee Valley College in the Grove Auditorium. Science in our valley is the overall theory and theme of the talk. 4 to 5 p.m. tomorrow, and go by and enjoy yourself. Hear an informed opinion on, and an optimistic one for that matter, which I really enjoy. People, for some reason, like optimism, don't they, Doctor? Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, they do. This is something that came to me about 20 years ago, but I started writing the book 12 years ago, and I thought it would never end. The problem with that is you want it to end so fast you don't see the forest for the trees, and there's some things I left out that I'll be sharing tomorrow night.
The book is called Environmental Success Stories, Dr. Frank Dunham. What are all the subjects you teach at Whitman?
Chemistry. All of them are chemistry. We at Whitman, we have some wonderful courses for the humanities and social science majors where we don't make them take a very boring semester on Gen Chem, on the periodic table. We create physics and biology and chemistry courses that are things they actually need to know to be a successful citizen in life. But I teach a little physics of instrumentation and an engineering course in pollution.
Good to talk with you, Doctor. I appreciate your time today. By the way, the doctor should get credit because he's filling in. He was going to do half a show, but we had a cancellation. He did the whole show, and he could probably do another one from what I understand by talking with him. Thanks for...
Thank you so much.
It was really a pleasure meeting you, at least on the phone, Doctor, so we'll have to do it in person next time, all right?
Okay, you can come tomorrow night and meet me in person.
Good idea. 5 o'clock, 4 to 5 o'clock at the Wenatchee Valley Grove Auditorium. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Dr. Frank Donovan, professor at Whitman College, 12:54 here at News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560.